EJ Miller is a longtime stand-up comedian and actor who is honing that stand-up craft here in Austin this weekend at Creek and the Cave. Originally, there were shows Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday's shows had to be canceled, but there still are Friday and Saturday shows. You can go to creekandcave.com to snag tickets. And TJ is nice enough to join me now. TJ, thank you so much for the time. As we get going here, I just wanted to clarify something. Are you based out of New York or Denver currently?
I'm based out of New York City.
Okay.
So that's where I live. And then
you're in Denver right now.
Right now I'm in Denver in my childhood bedroom.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I've got my weapons collection here.
But the Viking horns above your right shoulder, yeah.
Viking horn is important. And then the warthog mirror that my mother got me when I was obsessed with warthogs in junior high. And she got me a warthog. She adopted a warthog for me at the zoo. And I thought, this is so amazing. I can't believe I have my own warthog at the zoo. And I just was so happy about it. And we go to the zoo and I call out his name because you get to name the warthog. And he never really responded. And then it was almost like I found out about Santa Claus when I found out that the warthog is, anyone could have adopted him. So he had, you know, it's just a donation thing. It was a fundraising thing. So, you know, hundreds of other kids had adopted the same warthog. And I wouldn't say I was pissed. I would say that I had to look in that mirror a couple of times and say, what is life all about? What are these shenanigans? What are these deceptions that parents play upon us?
It's still slightly more valuable than the naming a star after somebody, though, because at least you get to go see the warthog versus guessing the star.
Yeah, I love guessing the star, though. Here, I named a star after you. Well, which one? Yeah, it's one of those. Look, you pick it. Yeah.
So I'm excited to check you out in town at Creek in the Cave this weekend, TJ. I haven't decided whether I'm going to go to the Friday or Saturday show, but we do need to let people know off the top that the Thursday show is not happening. And
can't do the Thursday show.
So why did the Thursday show ultimately, the people who had already bought tickets for that, get moved to Friday or Saturday?
Well, my father had brain surgery after some pretty traumatic stuff. And he's still in the hospital, and my sister came in from Los Angeles. I'm here, my other two sisters, and it's really touch and go. And so I just need to be here tomorrow, Thursday, just to be here. He's really coming out of it. So we're in a good place, but I think it's better if I'm around when he's waking up. And it's great because if he makes it through this and doesn't die, then we'll be brain buddies. Because I had brain surgery in 2010. They removed an AVM, which is usually found in autopsy. And, you know, funnily enough, I take Vimpat and I used to take Keppra for the seizures that can happen because of my surgery. Mm-hmm. And my father is now on Vimpat and Keppra. And so we're going to be brain buddies. Saying to him as soon as he wakes up.
So you're essentially going to be like his Obi-Wan Kenobi then for the brain surgery.
I think so. And I think it'll be really fun for the first time in our entire lives for me to be like, let me tell you a little something about Kim. Okay. Because I've been through this. You haven't, obviously. I have much more experiences. Here, sit down. Oh, you're already sitting? Okay. Then just sit up straight. And, so I'll be able to have all that experience. So that's pretty fun. But yeah, it was really scary for a second. So I appreciate that everybody is like able to change their plans and come on Friday or Saturday. And if they can't all be back soon enough. But yeah, I say make Friday or Saturday work. It's going to be a great show. These are great shows.
Oh man, Creek in the Cave is such a great spot to see show too.
It's the best.
And I know, I feel like you've been there, you were there maybe a year ago, but you've been to Austin a bunch throughout your comedy career. And I not only know that because I've seen you come through town, but on your most recent stand-up special, Smooth Peanut Butter, you actually make a joke about being in Austin, and Austin, the whole keep it weird mantra, which is, I'm not going to try and retell your joke to you. That would be idiotic.
I'll go ahead and tell.
Yeah, but it's a great joke. And what do you like about coming to perform in Austin, TJ, other than the fact that it is a very weird place?
Well, it's fun to make fun of Austin, and you guys have a really good sense of humor about yourselves.
Yeah.
And now we'll be different because I haven't been there since it's had such a tech explosion. And, it gets stranger and stranger every year. I don't even think you need to say keep Austin weird anymore because the people that come are coming in from California and they're flying in from all over the country. And you guys are just exploding, and the comedy scene is huge there. And I think it's a rapidly changing city, and I think in the best possible way. I think it's really I think you guys, the secret's out. And Denver, we're having the same problem in Denver as well. But yeah, when you live in such a cool city, yeah, people are going to start moving there, especially with
Denver,
remote work.
Nashville, where you recorded that most that Smooth Peanut Butter special, is another one
Yeah.
of those towns too. It's just if a place is cool enough, people are going to flock to it. And while a lot of folks who have been here want to cling to the past, that's not the reality with some place that that people deem cool enough to want to uproot their lives to come take part of too. The key, and people like Matthew McConaughey have talked about this. He is the unofficial mayor of Austin, after all, is just make sure that wherever you're moving from, you're not bringing those same problems and gripes to that new place, whether it's Austin, Denver, Nashville, Boise, anywhere else
Yeah.
like that, you know?
I love that Boise's gotten in the mix. But you're right. I mean, so my stand-up special that was filmed in is on my YouTube channel. It's called Dear Jonah. And then audio, we did a separate album from there called Smooth Peanut Butter. But all of that is in Nashville, and they're kind of feeling similarly to they're feeling similarly to Austin right now. And
Yeah.
Denver right now is kind of frustrated with the amount of just the sheer amount of transplants. But I was talking to my nephew about this, and he was kind of like, well, I'm a transplant because he came in from New Orleans after the hurricane. And I think that Denver and Austin soon are going to be a place like New York where almost nobody's from Austin,
Yeah.
Because in New York, if you say from, and somebody says, oh, I'm from New York, you kind of go, whoa, really? What part? Oh, Brooklyn, Boogie Down Bronx. I'm actually from Manhattan. I bet I've met 25 or 30 of those people. That's how many people came in from somewhere else.
God, you've been in New York for a while too. That's crazy that it's only 20 or 30.
I mean, really, you don't meet that many people who are from there. And all of our friends, ironically, two of my wife's good friends, so I'm friends with one of them. They're both from Texas. One's from Plano, the other's from Dallas. And then, my friends around there, I have one friend is from New York, he's from Queens. And then everybody else is from Chicago, Philadelphia. I came up from, some are California. There's one comic who's from Bergen, Norway. What I say is that New York City is like the World Series of being a human being. It is that competitive. You have to be that good of a human being to like you're operating. Now, does that make all of us happier? No, not necessarily at all. And it costs so much to live there that we have a game called Where Would I Live Like a King if I spent the money that I spent on this one bedroom? And Boise comes up. It's like I could buy a house in Boise, Idaho. That's like a full, beautiful, gorgeous house. If I just didn't pay my mortgage for a year, if I just took that money, I could go and have a down payment for like almost a mansion. So we joke about that too. But I think Austin, we hear that's also our joke is we hear people in Austin, people in Denver, people in, where was I recently? People in Pittsburgh, people say, oh, it's getting so expensive here. It's just getting so expensive. And that's happening in Austin now. But again and again, I say, well, you got two options. You can leave because this is going to happen no matter what, or you can move further out of town, or you can just understand that now an apartment in downtown Austin is probably crazy expensive now, like near the river or even off the river.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what's happening. It's a bummer in some ways, but in other ways, you already had great, the culinary scene, great music, everything. But now it's going to be world class, and you'll be the hub culturally of the Southwest, sort of.
Yeah, well, the fact that comedy has blown up like it has is a fascinating turn of events, too. And obviously, Rogan moving here and starting the comedy mothership is a big part of that. But Freak in the Cave was here prior to that. Vulcan does a decent job. The Helium people coming in and reopening Cap City Comedy Club and doing it a little bit removed from downtown versus where all those other clubs are now, too. Like, truly, like any weekend, you can go see just a cold-blooded stand-up murderer like yourself and do so for a pretty nominal cost as well. So, you know, it's part of the reason why I love what I get to do right now is because I am a stand-up nerd to the core. It's one of the first things I really loved in my life. It was like sports and then stand-up when I was a teenager. So to find myself at a place now where I not only get to go see world-class comedians make audiences laugh on a weekend basis, but also to get to talk to you guys too is just really cool. So Austin does have all that going for it. And by the way, for anybody that wants to complain about Austin getting too expensive, it is all relative. Yeah, the food costs a little bit more now. Yeah, if you want to live in downtown or Austin proper, that might cost a little bit more money, but there are still ways where we are escaping that. For instance, I parked downtown to go see a comedy show a couple weekends ago. And in paying for parking, like parking is ridiculous to pay for if you can even find it in like a New York or a San Francisco or a LA or you and I both spent time in Chicago at as a separate job. Austin, it's still like a buck an hour to park on the streets downtown, which is laughable. You can't get it anywhere near that for those other places. It starts at like $5, if not $10 per hour, just to park on the street in those places.
100%. I mean, you want to stay for 2.5 hours, it's like $10 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then if you want to go into a parking garage, it's like $50 for the early bird special where you have to get in before 5 a.m. and get out before 7. And
it's a whole thing.
And what I thought you were going to say, but I'll bring up, is it's all relative, and it's also all kind of part of the you know, it's all kind of, everyone's going to make more money. Also, if the food is more expensive in a restaurant, then those people that are serving, they're going to make more money. They're going to spend money on this stuff and go to these shop owners. They're going to make more money. So they're going to be able to bring in more, you know, it all works sort of like that. And, you know, it's good for the city. Even though it can be growing pains and a little bit painful, it's good for the city.
Yep, in a way, it's like competition breeds greatness. And it's maybe a little bit unfair at times with people getting priced out of situations that they've been in for a while. But that's why you have to keep working hard and keep grinding, too, to either
make
up or to find a different way to survive in a place that you love. Or maybe you don't love it as much anymore, so you decide to go someplace different.
I think that's right. And I think you only, that's what I say about Denver all the time, is you only can keep the secret so long.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to, you're not going to say, well, Austin's, you know, it's the most amazing thing. Nobody knows about, eventually, and people have found out. And so they're flooding in. And I feel the same thing's happening for Denver right now. The only two secret cities left really are Pittsburgh, because people just don't know how cool Pittsburgh is. And then Chattanooga, Tennessee.
What?
Is this incredible? Chattanooga right now is like Austin, like 8 years ago or something like that. And so Chattanooga, exactly. People go, what? And it's like, it is so cool. The food's amazing. They've got a coffee culture. You know, it's just, it's got that Tennessee vibe, but, and you know, there's a hotel that has, you sleep in train cars, and it's just all, it's got all these things, and nobody would have ever, it just never gets mentioned, you know? And in the South, people are starting to find out, but the difference there is if you find out in the South that a place is great, well, it's not like Austin where everyone in the country has heard about Austin, thinks it's cool, wants to know what's going on, wants to go and visit. And Nashville is a problem because people go to party there and then they realize how fun it is and they start to think, I'm going to come back. And what I've noticed in Denver is happening a lot is people go, you know, I was going to move here for a year, like just to like be on vacation or try something different. And then they all stay because there's no, because the weather, there's no better weather.
Well, it's not just the weather, the 300 bluebird days per year, right? But you have the access to the mountains, which are, everybody knows about the mountains in the winter. The mountains are the underrated place to be in the summertime. People think beach in the summer. I love going to the mountains in the summertime.
It's the greatest. And you do, you can mountain bike, single track. You know, there's so much great hiking here. Yeah, there's so many things that you can do in Denver year round. And so I really miss it here because in New York, two things happen. One, you don't have access to the outdoors like this, but we still, you know, there are ways to do that. But two, you're working so hard to live there that you just don't have as much time to sort of say, you know what, I'm going to take off Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday and, you know, do my thing in New York City. You sort of go, yeah, I got to be working on Thursday and Friday and maybe Saturday. So it's kind of a trade-off there, but I love cities so much. And I grew up inside the city in Denver.
Yeah.
And so I really, really like, I really like living in Manhattan. And every day when I go out there, I'm like, ah, this is amazing. You know, it's just very, very cool.
Big cities go through their ebbs and flows, and New York is no different. And everybody was
for sure.
New York left for dead once the pandemic hit and things got pretty sketchy for a year or two there. But New York, it's like any other big city, is starting to make that comeback now. Have things eased up a little bit on the subways, though?
I ride the subway. I'm a pretty big guy. So a lot of times my wife is like, well, yeah, of course it's easy for you to come home at 1:30 or 2:30 in the morning. None of these drug addicts want to mess with you because you're gigantic. And, you know, they really have to have a weapon to be able to say, give me your money or something. But she's a little thing and she's a glass hammer is what I call her. Cause she's tough, but fragile. And yeah, she kind of, she's the one who says, you know, it's getting the homelessness on Sixth Avenue right near where we live. It's pretty hardcore. And they're doing, I talked to some of the addicts and I was like, what's going on here? One of them was like, I said, what drugs are they selling? What are you doing? He's like, cocaine. And I was like, is it crack? And he's like, crack's cocaine. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess it is cocaine. I guess it really is cocaine. But yeah, so we've got crack dealers and crackheads and it's that right now, but I find it to be part of the charm and my wife finds it to be both frustrating, irritating, and the cause of her taking different routes and to get home. And also, you know, she used to bicycle home from her studio, which is near there. And now she just sort of takes a car home, which I think is fine. But I think it's a bummer for her because we both bicycle all the time in New York. That's the other thing. Because you think, okay, New York City, well, you get to walk a lot. It's like, no, I bicycle everywhere, and it is so fun. It's kind of replaced, city biking for me has replaced mountain biking, just because I like it so much. And we have a bike share, which you guys have in Austin, right?
We do have a bike share. I actually really started getting into that. We live in the suburbs now, so it's not as common for me to do that. But I really started getting into that the last year or two that I was living in Chicago. We moved away and early 2015, I guess. But prior to that, because Chicago, as you know, because you live there as well, it's laid out so beautifully. And they've actually made the efforts to protect bikers. Now, you still have to be careful because people are terrible drivers and you're essentially putting your life in other people's hands when you're on a bicycle. But I loved riding around the city in a bicycle like that. So I can imagine if you are comfortable with your own abilities and you know how to do so, how that would be really appealing in New York, too.
Well, New York has done, I mean, Austin's got a really cool downtown that is also walkable. You know, you can walk around and do everything that you want to do. But New York, we have docks for the bikes, like every three or four blocks.
Yep.
So there's just thousands of bicycles. And then they've put in dedicated bike lanes everywhere.
Oh, that's
and
good.
It used to be that it was just on the north-south avenues where there's actually space between, there's like a median between you and there's rows of cars between you and the actual traffic. But now they have all these cross street bike lanes that are dedicated bike lanes. And then the other thing about Manhattan is like, cars don't go very fast because there's so much traffic.
Right.
And so it's not as big of a deal. And so I feel really good bicycling in Manhattan. You just really have to pay attention. But you guys, Denver really hates the scooters and the electric bicycles, and Austin kind of hates that too, I think, right? Is that still
Dude,
the case?
the scooter thing started in Austin, and it is a huge nuisance because you have tourists going like 20 to 30 miles per hour. Sometimes they're on sidewalks, sometimes they're on the road. Nobody's wearing helmets. I have heard of and actually seen some pretty awful accidents with people who get on these things. You know, they're probably drunk, high, some combination of that. And I'm not judging, other than the fact that you're making a really poor decision to get on a fast-moving motorized vehicle when you are under the influence like
But
that.
does
Really
that,
bad
yeah.
things have happened as a result.
But don't have, I know there are a lot of people in Denver that I guess have gotten hurt. But the scooter is the most precarious thing. It's got the smallest little wheel in the front. If it gets jacked like this, you're going to go head over, right? Which can only happen in a bicycle if you really slam into the front of something. And then, yeah, people don't ride, they don't wear helmets. But the thing to me is like, people just, and I grew up kind of being so extra safe about, because my father was very big on like automobile safety, because he was sort of he was interested in racing, and he was big performance performance auto enthusiast. You know, he was a performance driver. And so the other thing that I think is people get on these scooters and they get comfortable. And they're just kind of looking around and seeing what things are like as they're going very fast. And nothing could be more dangerous. When I'm on a scooter in Denver, I'm only looking at one thing, and that's in front of me where I'm headed. And if I'm ever going to look at something around me, you got to take it down to 4 miles an hour or something where if you fall off, you're going to scrape your elbows, but that's it. And I just don't think people think like that. They just get on it and they're like, this is so fun. And then you fall. My nephew broke his clavicle and somebody else broke this or that. But in, and I feel bad for you guys because electric scooters in New York City, the ride shares are illegal in Manhattan. So there's no Bird, there's no Lime, there's
Oh,
nothing.
wow.
So we don't have any of that stuff. And then you can buy your own electric scooter, but I only see three or four of those. And those are really, there's a big thing too, because those are not allowed in certain bike lanes. And there's a lot of electric bicycles from the delivery guys, but that's still electric. They're still a bicycle. It's still a bicycle. Bicycles are much safer than these scooters. And there are electric bike ride shares here. I'm sure you guys have those also. The problem with it is you just leave them wherever. They just put them on the, it's so ugly for a city to have these bright green and bright purple, vehicles just discarded wherever somebody wants to leave them. It's very convenient.
Well, that's a big problem with the scooters too. The scooters are just blocking sidewalks at times. Like people just dump them and walk to wherever it is that they're going. And it's like, can we please exhibit just a tiny bit more courtesy here? I know that there is some
Pretend.
inherent belief that you are entitled to something because you're being you're doing a good job of saving the planet by riding an electric scooter versus something that's gas powered, but we still need to all look out for one another. And you just dumping that thing in the middle of a sidewalk is not doing it the right way. Now, I do have to admit, as
Yeah.
a native Texan, TJ, you are originally a Denver guy, that for a long time, Colorado people looked at Texans coming to their state as a sort of virus. But we love
Yeah,
Colorado.
we hate them.
Took my
Yeah, we
wife
hate
there
Texans.
a couple of years ago. Had a great great long weekend and Memorial Day, and it was topped off by getting to go to Red Rocks for the very first time to see Gary Clark Jr. perform. I set all of that up to ask you if you've ever gotten to perform
Wow.
stand up at Red Rocks, because that has become much more fashionable in the last several years, and I can imagine how cool that would be to get to do so.
I have, in fact. Can I just jump back and say, you talking about the scooters and trying to not become completely livid, but still with your piercing blue eyes, really just had this feel of like, and I will destroy all of them one day. You shall see. Yeah, so I performed in Red Rocks, and I like outdoor venues. Red Rocks was more for the fun of having done it. It's a terrible place to do comedy.
Oh, really?
Horrible. Because all the laughter just escapes upwards. That's why we always want low ceilings in comedy clubs. We want them to be in basements because we need the audio, not just for us, but other people need to hear how much people are laughing, and that makes them laugh harder. So I never want to perform, no joke, I've done it, and I really wouldn't want to do it again. Because I did a short set at the beginning of something, and I mean, I guess I could play it if there was some demand or some reason why, but I would do it and not enjoy it, kind of. Isn't that weird to say? Whereas I play the Gothic Theater, it's about 500 people, and it's a big rock venue space, but it's a blast. Mm. Just because it kind of works comedically as a venue. And then, but a lot of the improvs that I play are 500 seats, and those are pretty expansive, but they still have a roof. Yeah. So that's what's kind of helpful for comedy. I'm going to make a t-shirt that says, if you're doing comedy, you need a roof.
I might buy that t-shirt because I'm in agreement. I admired the comedians who are trying to do the drive-in theater shows or do shows on a rooftop. Sam Riel actually has a really good special that was filmed on a rooftop during COVID. It's like
it is good.
That is not a good place to do stand-up because you lose the laughter, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think though that he's so calculated that he kind of was like, well, I'm doing these jokes and I know they're amazing. That's kind of his vibe.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm doing these jokes. I know they're amazing. So get on board or don't. It's your problem. That's your issue. But speaking of incredible places, the Creek in the Cave is such a great place to do comedy. And we had to move everybody from the Thursday show.
Yeah.
Because my father's brain surgery. Although when he gets out, we're going to be brain buddies. We're going to be on the same brain medication. And then Friday and Saturday would be great because Creek and Cave is my favorite. I haven't seen the Comedy Mothership yet. Mm-hmm. But I'm excited to see. I will go and see it this weekend. And I'm excited to see the Austin comedy scene and what it's become, because I knew about the Vulcan, but I've never performed there. And so I'm psyched to be back. And I'm good friends with the owner. I've been to jail with her, Rebecca Trent, the owner of the Creek in the Cave. Yeah.
Why did y'all go to jail together?
For marijuana. It was some fucking Texas bullshit. I don't know if I can say that on this, but
sure you can.
It was some in Texas bullshit. We were in New York, everybody circled up to smoke some weed, and then these cops just busted us out of nowhere. And I think it was my fault because I was like, let's just go smoke right over here. Because in my mind, I was like, it's New York, who cares?
How long ago probably was this?
A long time ago.
Okay. It's been decriminalized here now, thankfully. But yeah, there was a ridiculous attitude towards it going back, sadly, not that long ago.
Yeah, and so it was not that long ago for us, but it would have been 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And they put us in jail together. It was just so crazy that they kind of were like, you've got to, until we can do the paperwork and shit, you just are all going to be in a cell together. And then after that, some kids fucked with her and Nikki Glaser, and I kind of laid them out, which is also very Texas.
Jail or out of jail?
No, out of jail. Afterwards, these kids were talking shit to the two girls, and that's the thing that I just can't stand. And so I just had to put them on the ground, all three of them. And so we know each other very well. But that's the kind of roughhouse chick Rebecca is, and that's why she took the Creek in the Cave from Queens to Austin, Texas.
Yeah, it's a great spot. So for people who are curious right now, TJ, you are bringing the Crowd Sorcerer Tour here to Creek in the Cave this Friday and Saturday. Is there a general theme that people should expect from the Crowd Sorcerer Tour?
Well, it's a lot of, crowd work has become a dirty word because everybody is trying to do it and nobody is good at it.
That's the dirty little secret about crowd work that you see on social media. And I feel like it was Ari Shaffir who maybe said this a couple weeks ago, but he's right. It's like one out of every 10 to 15 clips of them trying to get at somebody who is yelling something at them that is actually good. Most of the time it's pretty lame, but you do a great job at it, which is showcased in your Smooth Peanut Butter special.
Yeah, exactly. That album has got a lot of it. And if you I did a completely crowd work special, and it's called The Blue Room in Springfield, Missouri. That's also on my channel. And that's a lot of fun too. And I just sort of, I kind of like, I've always been good at that. I mean, I'm not going to say it, but like Ari actually was the one on Joe Rogan. Ari I guess Shane Gillis and Mark Norman, and they were all like, you know, TJ can just go on stage with nothing and go as long as he wants, you know? And that's really true, because it's not just crowd work. It's like, I'm riffing, and the reason it's the crowd sorcerer too is because the crowd is sort of the source of the comedy that I'm doing, kind of crowdsourcing it. Yeah. But the way that I do it is pretty like, you know, I don't know if it's magical. Maybe it's the dark arts with those piercing blue eyes. But no, I mean, it is a lot about the crowd talking about them, talking to them, and then talking about Austin and kind of asking about, because I am so location specific.
Yeah.
And so there'll be a lot of that as well, which will be good.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. And not to challenge you, but I've only had one comedian ever say something about me in a crowd in the 40 to 50 shows that I've been into. And it was Dave Attell. So it's high honor being told by Dave Attell.
Well, you know what? I think if you come to a show, let's get you right up front.
I'll be right up front. And Dave Attell called me a battle bot, and then he moved on really quickly like Attell does. And it cracked me up because nobody got it, but I did, because I'm the jackass with a faux hawk at the age of 46.
Battle bot is really funny. I kind of love the faux hawk, though. I'll get into it. I would hit harder on your complexion, but you'll hear all about that when you come see me. Two shows Friday, two shows Saturday. It's going to be so fun. I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait. All right, last question now, TJ. I love stand-up. You love stand-up. What do you love about stand-up?
I like that you, from a person who does it, I like that you're the writer. You're the writer, producer, director, performer, editor. You're everything. You get to decide everything. And for me, I really like that each night, I don't know what it's going to be. It's going to be different each and every show. And so that's really fun. You can decide, I'm just going to do all material, or this time I'm going to riff the entire hour. And it depends on the audience. You know, this is an audience that really needs harder jokes, or this audience, I can be a little bit dirtier. But so much of what I do is improvisation. And that's great, because when you're an actor, you're an employee. You show up, and if they hire me, I'm definitely improvising. But if they, you know, if they're trying to do a certain scene and get a certain thing, that's what I'm doing. I'm working for them. So stand-up is different. But there's nothing more electric, because I do this all the time. I'll do a set, and then on the way home, I'll stop into the Comedy Cellar or a different comedy club to stand, and I'll just watch stand-up. I just love it so much, and it's so electric to be in a room with people and hear everybody laughing, and they're all strangers, but they're having the same positive, joyful emotions. It's just one of the coolest things. And people used to ask me, what's your favorite thing? Voiceover, film, television, you know, stand up. And I said, well, it's all comedy for me. I just love doing comedy. And the more I've done stand up, the more I realize that's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, I love how stand-up comedians are no longer beholden to their Hollywood overlords trying to get that sitcom deal or get cast in movies or anything else. So congrats to you on all your successes up to this point. Going to highly recommend that people go to freakincave.com to get tickets to either the Friday or Saturday shows. No more Thursday show. He will still be here Friday and Saturday, two shows each night. And if you are curious to hear some of the crowd work or some of the general stand-up stuff, you should go to TJ's YouTube page. Just search TJ Miller. I feel like you've put out a bunch of stuff just in the last year, crowd work and otherwise, that Dear Jonah special, which I'm looking forward to watching after this. And you also have that audio only special, Smooth Peanut Butter. I can't remember the last time that I just listened to a comedy album, and maybe going back to my teenage years, but I got to do that with this one.
Thanks, man. It's a fun album. It's my first album with an independent label. And it was just so cool to do it. It took a long time because I was such a perfectionist, but I think it's a great album. I really hope, you know, people listen to it and enjoy it. You're right, on YouTube, subscribe, and you'll see I'm always putting out new stuff. I've got more and more long form stuff in the, you know, in the barrel, in the cannon, in the artillery box. I have no idea. I have no idea what to say there. In the Santa sack, that's what it is. I'm playing Santa Claus a second time in the next film that I'm doing. But yeah, come and see the stand-up. Come and kind of enjoy it. and make sure to, say hello afterwards and maybe buy a little peanut butter or hot sauce. I have my own line of peanut butter, but I'll leave that to you all to Google TPB&J peanut butter. And then I've got my own line of hot sauce. That's my merch. But come for the jokes and come to support the Creek in the Cave. It's the best venue in Austin.
Absolutely. TJ, thank you so much for the time today, man. Safe travels to and from Austin this weekend.
Thank you, man. I'm afraid of your eyes.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. Thanks to you for hanging out. More of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time on Books on Pod.